Hi, listeners. It's Tucker Ligursky. As a researcher on Masters of Scale, I use the innovations of AI on a daily basis. And with an increasingly overcrowded market, it's hard to discern which ones are truly beneficial for my work, not to mention safe. That's where Grammarly comes in. My job requires me to prepare dozens of documents every day. And with Grammarly, I'm able to make my dossiers and research documents clear, more direct, and more concise. In fact, I recently discovered that Grammarly users spend 66% less time editing content, which is a huge advantage since our most precious resource is undoubtedly time. What I love about Grammarly is its commitment to responsible AI. My team works tirelessly to produce top-quality podcasts, and it's vital that we keep our data secure. Grammarly has been around for 14 years and has maintained a business model dedicated to never selling your data, which means you can trust it with your most sensitive information. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
When I travel for work, I often find myself caught in a blur of meetings and hotel rooms, and I miss out on what the city I'm visiting can offer. I'm sure you can relate. That's exactly why I wanted to recommend a new podcast from our team that changes this paradigm. It's called Offsite Adventures. It turns a simple work trip into an unforgettable adventure. In each episode, we reveal hidden gems in the most iconic business travel destinations. Just search for Offsite Adventures in your favorite podcast player. The show is produced by the same team behind Masters of Scale and presented in alliance with Capital One Business.
I'm an avid mountaineer, and so to me, I always wanted to contribute to stopping climate change. It felt wrong to put CO2 in the atmosphere and not take it back. It's normal to us that if we're using water, we are treating the wastewater, but we don't really have a waste management system for the atmosphere. As an engineer, noticing that there's no technical and no feasible solution out there for a treatment facility of our atmosphere, it was clear to me that something has to be done. We discovered by serendipity the opportunity to take CO2 out of the air and store it in the ground. Direct air capture is suddenly becoming a billion-dollar industry. We are essentially going from a very young industry with a limited number of players and experience to the playground. This is what we have to figure out going forward.
That's Christoph Giebald, co-founder and co-CEO of Climeworks, a Switzerland-based company that's become a leading player in carbon capture technology. Earlier this year, Climeworks became the first enterprise to be certified by a third party for taking carbon out of the air, storing it underground, and processing it into rock. I'm Bob Safian, former editor of Fast Company, founder of the Flux Group, and host of Masters of Scale Rapid Response. I wanted to talk to Christoph because direct air carbon capture has been the missing link in nearly all climate crisis solution plans. While not a silver bullet to our warming planet, carbon capture would fill a multi-gigaton gap to bring us closer to net zero. The question Christoph and his team face is how to scale the new technology, leveraging not just science, but investors, corporate partners, and governments. Christoph emphasizes the role of serendipity so far in Climeworks' breakthrough efforts, as well as the lessons learned through missteps and mistakes. From supplying fizz to Coca-Cola to a chance encounter with the former president of Iceland, Climeworks has found product market fit by pursuing a mountain climber's approach, not focusing too much on the top peak above, but following the path ahead, step by step. And in the process, they've given us a glimpse of what might be a better world for all. I'm Bob Safian. I'm here with Christoph Giebald, co-founder and co-CEO of carbon capture firm Climeworks. Christoph is coming to us from Zurich as I ask my questions from New York. Christoph, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bob, for having me.
So earlier this year, Climeworks announced that you'd received third-party certification for successfully taking carbon out of the air and putting it in the ground in a process that will turn it into rock. This is a dream for many climate watchers that this kind of technology could be successful. You've been at this for many years with your co-founder and co-CEO, Jan Wurzbacher. How significant was reaching this benchmark?
We started actually to do this already 15 years ago to develop technology to pull carbon out of the air. And some 5 years ago, started to put it in the ground. And initial efforts to do that have been solely based on the trust that existed in this field. So if you buy an electric car, you can feel the performance of the car, right? If you have solar panels, you can power your computers or your lights at home. If you capture CO2 from the air with machines and pump it in the underground, you're not feeling anything. You can't see CO2, you can't smell CO2. And so far, every action in this whole industry has been based on trust. We finally had a third party confirm and verify that the services we are doing are right and quantified in the way as we put it on our certificates.
You attended the World Economic Forum in Davos this year, not long after reaching this milestone. What kind of reception did you get?
At the World Economic Forum, I perceived a very genuine interest. Business leaders are gearing up and understanding solutions to achieve the targets that they have announced. And for us, being one pillar of the solution pool that is out there to achieve net zero by latest mid-century.
Yeah, you say it's one pillar. For people watching this, direct air capture can sound like it's like a silver bullet for the climate crisis.
First and foremost, we have to reduce CO2, like drive electric cars, insulate our houses, use renewable energy sources instead of fossil sources. However, there's only so much you can reduce. There's a remaining part of unavoidable emissions, around about 5 to 10%, and this has to be removed from the atmosphere. If we were to approach the full 100% with direct air capture, this would be simply uneconomical and unfeasible. We are the last resort for things you're not getting rid of otherwise, like agriculture, hard to abate emissions like flying, for example, or hard to decarbonize industry like steel making, aluminum making, etc.
You started this journey in university. You started the company in 2009, but there have been a lot of critical voices over the years about whether this could even work, whether this was feasible at all. Why did you keep going?
I'm an avid mountaineer, and the outdoors are a very sensitive environment, especially the mountains, the effects of climate change, like landscapes are changing. And so I always wanted to contribute to the topic of stopping climate change. To me, always, it felt wrong to put CO2 in the atmosphere and not take it back. It's normal to us that if we're using water and we are treating the wastewater, like if we have trash, we're not throwing it out of our windows in the streets and it's piling up. But we don't really have a waste management system for the atmosphere. As an engineer, noticing that there's no technical and no feasible solution out there for a treatment facility of our atmosphere, it was clear to me that something has to be done. I could have earned much more in the last 15 years elsewhere, but not earned more to my heart and my passion than what I'm currently doing.
You guys have scaled this technology to the point where you're able to remove thousands of tons of carbon, but we need to get to billions of tons to be climate relevant. Is reaching that goal applying what we know now at greater volume, or are there scientific hurdles that we still have to overcome, or is it about cost?
It's essentially about cost. Technology we have today and we are deploying today works, period. And we could scale that to gigatons. The question is, what is the ultimate cost entitlement of the technology that we're having today and will be achieved by scaling today's technology in the long run? We're working on heavy deployment of the current state of technology, and we are continuing to work on technology development to progressively walk down the cost curve.
How much energy does it take to remove carbon? Because you don't want to create as much as you're removing.
Very simple answer, 10%. If we take a ton of CO2 out of the air with our machines, we're emitting 0.1 tons in the form of gray emissions from both energy and material use. If we are serving a ton of carbon removal to the market, like be it corporates or private people, or maybe in the long run, even governments, what that means is we're taking roughly 1.1 tons of carbon out of the air and provide 1.1 tons for permanent underground storage in order to have net removed a ton of CO2 from the atmosphere.
I know that you opened your first commercial plant in 2021 in Iceland, where there is lots of geothermal power available there. So you are using renewable energy to be able to do that.
Exactly. We do focus on the application of sustainable energy sources to power direct air capture. Air capture, no matter how you do it, is an energy-intensive business. And you want to make sure that you're using renewable energy sources. Now, the world urgently needs to scale the deployment of renewable energy sources. However, there's a limit, like the classical example, maybe the wind is not blowing when you want to use your dishwasher, right? It's becoming increasingly a challenge to balance the availability of renewables and the need in the grids. Direct air capture can be a catalyst to the deployment of renewable energy systems because we can take renewables at times when others cannot, or promote the deployment of renewables in areas where you today don't have off-takers for renewable energy sources. Think about the sunbelt of the planet, right? If you install a large-scale direct air capture facility, you can promote the construction of a solar electricity park, and that can help to electrify parts of the world that are currently not being electrified. So in summary, yes, it requires energy, but it can also be a catalyst to much needed deployment of renewable energy sources.
I love the way entrepreneurship can evolve by plan and also sometimes just by happenstance, by luck. I understand that Iceland became the destination for your first commercial plant, not just because there was geothermal power there, but because of a chance meeting in Marrakesh you had with the wife of Iceland's president. Can you share that story?
I can confirm over the last 15 years, the really big breakthroughs were serendipity. It's probably a 90% serendipity and a 10% results of thorough planning. And the fact that we're operating in Iceland really goes back to lucky encounters, like being invited to a very special party at the COP in Marrakesh, where I happened to meet the wife of the former president of Iceland, who introduced me to the former president of Iceland, Ólafur Grímsson, who I had the chance to talk to and tell him that we're capturing CO2 from the air with machines. And he said, oh, well, that's beautiful. This is something he has been looking for many years, because in his country, in Iceland, since 2 decades, researchers have found a way how CO2 can be stored very effectively and safely in the ground. And he helped to enable contacts. And actually, it went very fast from the first encounter at this party in Marrakesh to the first pilot being installed. It took less than 12 months, which was remarkable for our company at that stage.
I understand you're working with other carbon storage companies on some other projects in Norway, in Oman. Why is that?
It's because of scaling. Our core competence is pulling carbon from the air in the most effective way. And the core competence of others is how CO2 can be stored in the safest and most durable way and lowest cost way in the underground. Underground storage depends heavily on the region you're working. For example, in Iceland, where we're actually doing underground mineralization, which means the CO2 is essentially turned into stone. Looking at in Norway, where it's more conventional underground storage, where the CO2 is locked up in the underground as a gas. In the United States, in Louisiana, we have a project going on, which is also more conventional storage. And those partners at those sites have to, of course, understand the local properties of the storage wells. And this is why it's distributed on several different shoulders.
Does it matter if carbon is captured in Iceland versus in the United States? Like, is there a different impact based on where it's captured, on the local climate or anything? Or
That's the beauty of air capture. It's independent of the location you're capturing the CO2. We can capture CO2 anywhere on the planet, and through diffusion and jet streams and the wind phenomena, it's diluting over the atmosphere.
So you've mentioned serendipity. You've mentioned scaling. I know that since you started Climeworks in 2009, you've tried a bunch of different business models. You tried selling captured carbon to Coca-Cola in an effort to close the carbon loop. You offer individuals an opportunity to pay for direct air carbon capture. Now you're focused more on corporate customers and this underground storage. The business model keeps shifting. Do you expect that to continue?
Actually, our original first dream has been to sell plants, but no surprise, no one wanted to buy those plants because no company on earth had the business model to buy and operate direct air capture machines. We transitioned to, we pre-finance those facilities and we operate it and sell CO2 molecules as a commodity. And that, again, transitioned to put the CO2 in the ground and lock it away safely. And we charge companies or people to pay us for the service of removing carbon from the air. The business model will clearly continue to change. What I do, however, see is that the product for carbon dioxide removal as a service for both people as well as corporates, and hopefully one day even governments, is a product to last. What will change is the details on how we go about it.
There are other direct air capture efforts out there. How much do you look at what they're doing at other technologies? How much does the industry collaborate versus compete? I mean, there aren't unlimited investment dollars, and yet in many ways, you're all on the same team because you're trying to develop this area.
There are a handful of companies that existed pre-2010. On the other hand, we are seeing more and more new companies existing only since 1.5 or 2 years. Now, the market is large enough for a good 2 dozens of companies. Climate science asks our industry to remove several gigatons of CO2 from the atmosphere. Individual company can achieve, if we are ambitious, say in the range of a gigaton. So if the target is 5 gigatons for direct air capture in 2050, and you have 5 super successful companies, like Unicorn Squared, it'll be 5 firms each contributing a gigaton. So plenty of space. In 20 to 30 years down the road, there will be an ecosystem of, I do think, 20 to 50 companies which are very, very successful, very profitable in this domain, capturing CO2 from the air.
Hi, listeners. It's Masha Mokutonina, a producer on Masters of Scale. I spend a large part of my day carefully crafting emails, composing documents, and endlessly responding to messages. Which is why I am such a big fan of Grammarly, the secure AI writing partner I use on a daily basis. Whether it's reaching out to high-profile guests or coordinating logistics with the production team, I use Grammarly to adjust my writing to different audiences while maintaining the brand voice of Masters of Scale. Grammarly helps spot redundancies and clean up sentences that are unnecessarily wordy, verbose, long-winded, and repetitive, like this one. Grammarly's AI prompts help guide my writing process, personalizing content based on context as well as making tone adjustments intuitively. It doesn't just help me generate more content, it helps me generate better content. Amazingly, Grammarly works seamlessly across my email, Slack, and over 500,000 apps and websites, so there is no cutting, pasting, or context switching needed. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
Before the break, we heard Climeworks co-founder and co-CEO Christoph Giebald talk about how direct air carbon capture can have a positive impact on the climate crisis. Now he talks about the rapid evolution of the carbon capture industry and how Climeworks' own path has been marked by unexpected pivots. He also shares lessons about following intuition, testing new ideas to find product market fit, and keeping your eye on what's directly in front of you, even if your dream goal is way up in the sky. There are different carbon capture that happens in industrial plants, which keeps emissions from ever reaching the atmosphere. Is that a related technology to what you're doing?
It's two different tracks. The only thing what we have in common is the underlying science. The way you capture a CO2 molecule from a very chemistry point of view is similar for capturing CO2 from the air and from a combustion flue gas. All the rest is very different. In air, CO2 is heavily diluted. It's 0.04%. In a combustion flue gas, it's 10 to 20%. So the system implementation, the business models, the market applications, and the whole value chain is different.
I ask these questions because the carbon capture industry can seem a little bit like a Wild West. You know, there are things happening at industrial plants. There are folks planting trees. You know, there's the work that you're doing. And as you say, there isn't sort of a recognized certification authority globally. Like, this industry and this marketplace is still early, and there's a risk about a trust gap in all that, about what you're getting for what you're spending.
Everything we do is actually going back to October 2018. The IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, released a report on the 1.5 degree target. And in this report, they made clear to achieve this target, you have to remove CO2 from the air in massive quantities, massive being gigatons. What that did to us and our whole industry was really a step change in perception. Like, before October 2018, everything we did was mainly based on us educating. Now, since October 2018, suddenly we had a lot of wind in our sails and the boat was driving much faster. And it not only did it for us, but for this whole ecosystem. It's actually not too much time where you had to figure out a lot of pieces of the puzzle, right? To me, it totally makes sense that you declare it as Wild West. On the other hand, I'm seeing substantial acceleration since October 2018, which gives me a lot of confidence that we can move the needle in the right direction for the 2050 targets.
In running this business, you started needing to know engineering. And then, as we talked about, some business model adjustments. Now you're adding people rapidly. You have different kinds of partnerships. How do you know if each next wave of skill sets is something you can handle?
The good news is we are two founders, and this is simply too much for one brain. The way we have split it up at Climeworks is that Jan is working on the technology and operations front, and I'm working on the market, investor, and policy side, so we can actually have our brains fully contributed to those two challenges of scaling market and scaling tech at the same time. What we developed over time, actually a lot, is intuition for certain things and gut feel for how things should be and where they should go. In 2017, our main business was about selling CO2 as a commodity. And we were extremely proud of having the Coca-Cola company behind it as a customer to the CO2 we're pulling out of the air to carbonate their drinks. And right at this time, we discovered, like, by serendipity, the opportunity to take CO2 out of the air and store it in the ground. And you have the ability to reduce actively the CO2 content of the atmosphere. And we did a couple of scoping calls. We had a pilot plant with a minimal CO2 capture capacity. In half an afternoon, like, by scoping five clients, the capacity of this plant was put on the market. And that felt, that somehow confirmed, hey, there could be something in there. This can be really a nice product market fit. And fast forward 5 years, the world is waking up on the need of carbon removal. Large corporates are integrating carbon removal in their business model. That was one of those intuitions where you thought, hey, people and companies, I'm sure they will love this. And today we see the fruits, and actually we do have, finally, after many years, this very nice product market fit.
It must be hard to make that pivot. I'm sure you work very hard to get a top-notch brand like Coca-Cola to be a customer, and then to get to the point where you say, maybe that's not even the business we want to be in.
Yeah, that's the thing with decisions. Decisions are mostly painful. And mostly, the more painful they are, the more powerful they can be. This saying of Warren Buffett, I think, who once said, successful people say no 9 out of 10 times. And saying no hurts. It really hurts. Like, saying no to opportunities hurts. And that's one of the biggest challenges in our field, is with this essentially unlimited market and essentially unlimited applications you could have for pulling carbon from the air, there's also the risk that you're not focusing. One of the most tricky parts is to constantly turn down on opportunities all across the board, like to people who are applying to your company, to potential partners, to potential investors, also to potential policy. So this constant refocusing and recalibrating on what you're up to, and then considering the bandwidth you have and what you can focus on.
So Climeworks has reached a certain stage of growth, a certain stage of opportunity. For you, for Climeworks, for Jan, what's at stake right now at this inflection point?
Half of my brain is in the future. I always try to figure out how to unlock the next phase of growth. And for example, in the United States, we have this huge piece of government support with the Department of Energy. There is $3.5 billion on the table to deploy direct air capture on a megaton scale. And on the other hand, we have the Inflation Reduction Act, which also has support for direct air capture. So the question that we're currently having is, how can we leverage what we have accomplished to date in the best way to fulfill the requirements of this program and show really the large-scale implementation of air capture in the United States? This is only half part of the story. The other half has to be financed from the private market or from investors. The direct air capture industry is suddenly becoming a billion-dollar industry where you're having projects being enabled on the billion-dollar scale, which is similar magnitude as other large-scale energy projects or renewable projects. So we are essentially going from like a very young industry with a limited number of players and experience to a playground that is reserved of very large energy companies. And figuring out how to convince investors to fill the gap, that is at stake going forward.
You sound excited by it, though.
This is dream policy and dream deployment support that's happening there. I mentioned I'm an avid mountaineer. When I studied in the US and end of my studies with two friends from college, I climbed Mount McKinley in Alaska. And it's a bit of like saying, hey, I'm really dreaming about climbing this mountain. And suddenly you have someone saying, okay, let's do it. Here's the gear you need. Here's your ticket to fly to Alaska. Here's the pair of ski you're going to use. Here's the plane to the glacier. It's a bit like that feeling, you know? You have been dreaming about that, and suddenly you really have the opportunity to do it.
I sometimes use a climbing analogy for entrepreneurship. You know, you work very hard to get to a pinnacle, and you look over your shoulder, and you pat yourself on the back that you've reached this place, and then you turn around and you realize you're only in the foothills, and there's yet another mountain to climb. Is that the way it feels for you?
If you're climbing Everest and if you're constantly looking to the peak, like you're frustrated all the time because it's so far away. But if you simply consider the next step you have to take, it can be a very beautiful journey. This is philosophy at Climeworks, is the power of small steps. And this is something everyone can do. If you on the one hand have like a very big target like climbing Mount Everest, but on the other hand, you focus on the next step and make sure you're not being killed on the next step that you're taking, and that you have the energy reserves to do it and the right team to do it, you'll be successful. If I recall summiting Denali, for example, in Alaska, I don't know, what was it, like a minute on the peak or 2 minutes on the peak? But it was a five-week journey and the time in base camp, the time in high camp. So if you do something like direct air capture, which is an extremely long journey, you have to acknowledge the beauty of the journey you're taking and not only think about the end game, else you're getting frustrated and demotivated.
Well, Christoph, this has been great. Thank you so much for doing it and for talking with us.
Thank you, Bob, for the invitation.
Masters of Scale Rapid Response is a Wait What original. It's hosted by me, Bob Safian, Masters of Scale's editor-at-large. Our executive producers are June Cohen, Darren Triff, and Jordan McLeod. Our chief content officer is Laurie Hoffman. Our producers are Adam Skuse, Catherine Clark-Gray, Alex Morris, Tucker Ligursky, and Chris Gauthier. Our music director is Ryan Holiday. Original music and sound design by Eduardo Rivera. audio editing by Keith J. Nelson, Stephen Davies, and Andrew Nault. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Special thanks to Emily McManus, Adam Heiner, Colin Howard, Tim Cronin, Kelsey Capitano, Sammy Aputa, Anna Pizzino, Sarah Tarter, Leah Sarametis, Chineme Ozuquena, Alfonso Bravo, Aria Finger, and Saida Sapieva. Visit mastersofscale.com/rapidresponse to find the transcript for this episode, and please subscribe to our email newsletter. Become a member of Masters of Scale to get access to a year's worth of courses and content on the Masters of Scale Courses app. Find out more at mastersofscale.com/membership.
Hi, listeners. It's Anya Profumo, a producer on Masters of Scale. Scaling your business is no easy task, especially when it's so important to really nail the small details, like how do I write an email that gets my point across? How do I easily convey complex information? Or more importantly, how do I manage my reputation? All of these skills are crucial to taking your business to the next level, but you're not alone in asking these questions. Every week on Think Fast, Talk Smart, join Matt Abrams, a lecturer in strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business, as he sits down with experts in the field to discuss these real-world challenges. So head to your podcast player and search for Think Fast, Talk Smart for the best tools, techniques, and best practices to help you communicate more effectively.